When attackers shout Allahu Akbar while committing violence, a familiar pattern unfolds. Western leaders insist these acts have nothing to do with Islam, while perpetrators explicitly cite Islamic texts as motivation. This disconnect lies at the heart of Ayaan Hirsi Ali's provocative work. As someone who survived female genital mutilation, escaped an arranged marriage, and ultimately rejected her childhood faith, she speaks with unique authority about Islam's relationship to violence. Her journey from devout believer to outspoken critic offers a rare window into the theological tensions that define modern Islam and the possibility of reform. My religious education began in a Somali dugsi, where children chanted Quranic verses under threat of physical punishment. In Saudi Arabia, I witnessed public beheadings and floggings, the brutal application of Sharia law that most Westerners only read about. Later, in Nairobi, I embraced a more militant version of Islam that emphasized Muhammad's political ideology from his Medina years. When Ayatollah Khomeini called for Salman Rushdie's death, I agreed without question. The moderate Islam of my childhood was being replaced by a more radical interpretation that demanded action against perceived enemies. My path away from Islam accelerated when my father arranged my marriage to a distant relative. I fled to Holland as an asylum seeker. Though initially still identifying as Muslim, exposure to Western education at Leiden University challenged my worldview. The critical thinking I encountered, combined with witnessing Dutch society's nonviolence and gender equality, created cognitive dissonance I could no longer ignore. After 9/11, I could no longer reconcile my doubts, ultimately rejecting the Quran as divine, Muhammad as a moral guide, and the concept of afterlife. My story isn't exceptional. Many Muslims struggle with similar conflicts between faith and reason. Shiraz Mahar, who grew up in Saudi Arabia and later joined Hizb ut-Tahrir in England as a regional director promoting caliphate ideology, eventually left extremism after the 2005 London bombings. For many young Muslims today, the choice becomes stark: abandon their faith entirely or embrace militant ideology. I believe there must be a third option beyond apostasy and atrocity, but it requires recognizing that Islamic extremism is indeed rooted in Islam itself, a reality many refuse to acknowledge. Questioning Islam is extraordinarily difficult due to an organized honor brigade preventing inquiry. Clerics fear critical thought leads to apostasy. As scholar Yusuf al-Qaradawi admitted, if they had gotten rid of the apostasy punishment, Islam would not exist today. Islam presents a paradoxical structure, decentralized yet rigid. Any man with self-professed Quranic knowledge can become an imam, yet the faith permits little questioning of fundamentals. This makes reform challenging. There's no single authority to endorse change, while conformity remains strictly enforced. Despite these obstacles, a Muslim reformation isn't just possible, it's already underway. Three factors crucial to Martin Luther's success exist today: technological change, urbanization, and state backing. Modern information technology creates pathways for new ideas, similar to the printing press in Luther's time. There's growing support for reform among urban Muslims who find strict Sharia impractical. A 2014 Pew survey showed widespread concern about Islamic extremism across Muslim-majority countries. Finally, political support is emerging, exemplified by Egyptian President el-Sisi's 2015 speech calling for a religious revolution. Islam today faces fundamental challenges, from the dual reverence of Muhammad as divine and the Quran as God's literal word. This creates unique barriers to reform, as perceived disrespect toward either can trigger violence, from riots over rumored Quran desecration to murders of those accused of insulting the Prophet. Unlike Abraham and Jesus, Muhammad served as both prophet and conqueror, personally leading military campaigns. The Quran documents his treatment of enemies, including executions and enslavement. After his death, his successors expanded Muslim control through conquests that gave subjugated populations limited options: conversion, death, or acceptance of tax-paying dhimmi status. From its inception, Islam merged faith with power, embedding tribal, military, and patriarchal values as eternal spiritual ideals. Muslims learn that the Quran represents Allah's complete, final, and unchangeable revelation. This creates a critical issue. Violent extremists can find scriptural justification for their actions. As former radical Taufik Hamid notes, literal interpretations of certain verses justify fighting non-Muslims until they convert, pay the humiliating jizya tax, or face death, an interpretation endorsed by all four major schools of Islamic jurisprudence. In October 2014, three American-born Muslim teenagers were arrested at Chicago's O'Hare Airport attempting to join Islamic State. The sister, who had memorized the entire Quran, wrote to her parents, "Death is inevitable. What we did to prepare for our death is what will matter." The afterlife dominates the Islamic mind as thoroughly as the clock structures Western thinking. While Westerners plan according to time, Muslims constantly hear the approach of Judgment Day. From childhood, they learn that life is merely a test determining their place in paradise. The Quran emphasizes that earthly life is transitory, for the life of this world is but goods and chattels of deception, 3185. Islam uniquely combines martyrdom with murder, where individuals simultaneously commit suicide and kill others for religious reasons. Martyrs are believed to have all sins forgiven and ascend to the highest level of paradise. The call to martyrdom permeates mosques, schools, and media across the Muslim world, with children being inculcated with death wishes, from Egyptian child preachers extolling martyrdom to Somali fathers recruiting children for suicide bombings. Today, a war rages within Islam between reformers and fundamentalists fighting for the hearts of passive Muslims. Currently, fundamentalists appear to be winning through radicalization, violence, vast resources, and ideological coherence. Yet I believe a Muslim reformation is coming. The internet may be for Islam what the printing press was for Christianity. Women lead this reform movement, challenging their subordinate status under Sharia that justifies abuses like male guardianship and child marriage. Protest movements are emerging across the Middle East. Five core concepts in Islam must be amended for compatibility with modernity. 1. The Quran must no longer be viewed as the immutable word of God. 2. The emphasis on afterlife must shift to prioritizing this life. 3. Sharia must be subordinated to civil laws. 4. The practice of commanding right and forbidding wrong must end. 5. The concept of jihad as literal war against non-Muslims must be disavowed. The growing number of Muslim dissidents and reformers worldwide shows this reformation is already underway. These brave individuals include dissidents in both Western and Islamic countries, as well as clerical reformers. Despite their differences, those who advocate breaking with Islamic orthodoxy to empower individuals and create civil states are allies of human freedom. The West must support these dissidents. This reformation would benefit not just women, religious minorities, and free thinkers, but Islam itself. Like any revered structure, it requires renovation to avoid collapse. The choice facing Muslims isn't between tradition and heresy, it's between a living faith that evolves or a fossilized ideology that fuels violence and repression.